Bring you these fraternal greetings from Christchurch. The many occasions down in Christchurch, they've got four there, so there's an abundance down there. And we haven't actually joined in a particular ecclesia yet. We're testing out the waters, so to speak. Here. So it's quite interesting when we go to a casual meeting there. They say to us as visitors from Bay of Plenty. So I've said it quite a few times, and they shoulder tapped us and said, "How long is that going to last?" You know. So good to be home. My talk this evening. This morning is on forgiveness, and it's been quite an interesting journey for myself. So this next order is a lot about myself with regards to forgiving others for issues that they have done to me, be it either personal people or corporates and the big enterprises of life, and people that are within those corporate enterprises. So the lessons that I've learned have been quite powerful, and I thought it's good to share them. First thing to learn with forgiveness is that it's a journey. It's not something that is instant, and it's like a flowing river. So you start, and as you go more and more through life, and more through a particular either person that you're needing to forgive that has either hurt you, you might not get that sense of forgiveness straight away. And you might need to forgive someone because they might have abused you. They have wronged you, they might have abandoned you, they might have broken your trust in any particular way, they might have physically hurt you, emotionally hurt you, financially hurt you. You might feel that you've suffered injustice, you have this effectively this burning thing within you that there's something that's misplaced, something that's disjunct. And so the idea is that if you can say, "I'm starting the journey of forgiveness to whoever has wronged you in any way," that's the beauty. It's that first little step of a multitude. So first of all, what is forgiveness? We'll do two things. What is forgiveness and what it is not? Okay. The first of all, forgiveness is being able to say what the person is that they have wronged you and to physically speak it. So you can say, "That person has wronged me in this way," and you can actually vocalize it, and you might use some words that have a few F's in the front of them and S's and stuff like that, but the idea is that you actually can vocalize it. Or if you feel that that is the situation, you might say, "I can write it out. This person wronged me in the following way," and you can actually be explicit and actually say it out. So you can explain how manipulative someone was, or how insensitive they were to you, or that person was a bully, and it was a bully emotionally, physically, and socially to you. So effectively, the warfare that has happened to you, you can actually be able to vocalize it and write it down. And effectively, it's important that you highlight how bad it was to you, because if you actually don't say it like it is, in essence, you're brushing it under the carpet, and it becomes effectively a festering sore that actually doesn't go away. So that's effectively to get it out onto the table, so to speak. Next thing, what is forgiveness? Forgiveness is not approving or condoning what that hurt or abuse was right. You're not saying it was right by offering forgiveness. Forgiveness for us, we often think, "Oh, if I forgive somebody something, that's approving of what they did was correct." Not the case. So you're not approving it. Important thing with approving doesn't have to be a double-sided approval. Let me start that sentence again. Forgiveness doesn't have to be double-sided. Because you forgive someone doesn't necessarily mean that they forgive you. Okay? So that's an important thing to understand. We often will wait for someone to forgive us. We say, "Oh, I forgive you." And in that sentence, we are waiting for them to say the same back to us. "Oh, all right, we reconcile, we forgive." Not the case. If you're waiting for them to confess, to apologize, to admit that they were wrong, you may go down to the grave before that ever happens. So do not carry that with you. If you carry that burning thing inside your gut that you are waiting for them to forgive and to be in the same space as you, it may never happen. So effectively what they're doing is they're pinching a part of you, part of your brain, part of your tummy, part of your gut, and you living with that burn inside you. So why do you want them to have that control over you? And so it's important that you put that to the one side. And it weighs you down. If you don't actually see it as two different components, your forgiveness and theirs, it'll weigh you down. You've got that burning hole in your gut. And justice may never come. You may go to the grave, and that justice may never come in your eyes. One of the important things that we have to learn with justice and vengeance is often we like to behave like we are God. We actually like to be the venger. And in the story that we read, and Solomon, with Samson this morning in Judges, what we're going to do is grab a few little verses. So come with me to Judges 15. And what we're going to see is that how if you don't get into the forgiveness mode of life, it actually stacks up and actually it gets worse and worse and worse. So vengeance escalates if we are not careful in our lives. So this is quite a gory story here, but in its goriness, it actually highlights how that we in our lives can actually escalate things and not get them removed out of our soul. So it starts off with Samson in Judges 15 verse 1. He goes off to be with the young lady that he has married. Okay, so he married this Philistine, and he goes off, and obviously his wife is now staying with her dad, and he brings his goat along, and he says, "I'm going to my wife," in verse 1. And when he gets there, he finds that the dad has actually given his wife to someone else. And he's mad as a snake in the grass. And the dad says, "Oh, I've given your wife to someone else. Have a daughter. Have my other daughter. She's actually prettier. You know, have her." And you think, oh my goodness, what a custom of the day that that people could just be traded like that. Women could be traded like that. He says in verse 2 in the NIV, the dad says, "Oh, I thought you hated her. I gave it to your companion, to your mate, his wife. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead." I think, oh my goodness. Notice the next verse. This is the part that we've got to be careful, because sometimes this is how we feel. When someone does something wrong to us, Samson said, "This time I have a right to get even with the Philistines." And so how often does that happen in our lives? Someone wrongs us, and now we say, "It is my right to get vengeance back on the other person." And so what did he do? He then escalates the thing. He takes now 300 foxes, puts torches to their tail and sets them alight, and they run through and they torch down their whole thing. So he says, "Huh, you did that for me. I'm going to play the tit-tat game, and I'm actually going to lift it up one higher," effectively creating, as they might use the words today, economic terrorism in their town. And notice then with verse 6, he comes and it says, when the Philistines asked who did this, they said it was Samson down the road there. So they carry on. The Philistines went up and burnt her and her father to death. So the Philistines turn around and say, "Oh, Solomon did that. All right, we're going to play this tit-tat game again, and we're going to go one higher now." And so what they do is they turn around and they say, "Go, we're going to put to death the father and Samson's daughter. So Ned, take that, Samson. We've got one better over you now." So they're playing this vengeance game to each other. And then eventually they come down and they take they capture Samson. We go down to verse 15. And Samson then takes a jawbone of an ox and he goes out, and now he kills how many people at the end of verse 15? 1,000 men. He goes with a jawbone and he kills 1,000 men. So it started off, the story started off with the father giving his wife to someone else. It escalated to economic terrorism. It then escalated to the death of the father and Samson's wife, and then it escalated to the death of 1,000 people. And so what we have to be careful of in our side is that if we don't forgive people for the little things, what actually happens is that we end up with, they didn't forgive me, and therefore I'm going to be spiteful to them. They're going to be spiteful to me in that way, well, I'm going to hurt them even more. Oh, they hurt me like this, I'm going to be even worse back to them again. And so what we've got to be careful of is not to get that into that escalating role. Because now, who does vengeance belong to? Who does this story of getting right belong to? Who does it belong to in the Bible? It belongs to God. So what I'm going to first of all take you is to Deuteronomy 32. Come with me to Deuteronomy 32. Fifth book in the Bible, in chapter 32. And leaving vengeance to God is a hard thing, because when someone has done something wrong to you, it sits with you, and you toss and turn it in bed at night. You can't get it out of your mind, and it burns a hole in your heart. So this, Deuteronomy 32 verse 35, is a powerful thing for us to learn. This is God speaking, and he says, "It is mine to avenge. I will repay. In due time, their foot will slip, and their day of disaster is near." Okay, so there's two very powerful lessons for this. Number one, to revenge is God's privilege, not ours. What does God want from us? Forgiveness. So what he wants from us, he says, you are in the forgiveness game, I am in the vengeance game. And notice what he says, the second thing powerful for us, I will repay, I'll get them back, don't you worry, God says, in due time their foot will slip. In God's time, not in our time. We want vengeance back today, straight away. We're mad as a snake in the grass. We go to bed tossing and turning. We cannot believe that they are still, a person might still be ugly like that forever. But we have to learn to take that breath, forgive, and allow, say, God will avenge. In God's time, he will sort it out. And that's hard for us, very hard as humans. It is something that kicks against us, and we battle with it. Come with me now to Nahum, that little book, it's easy to find, Genesis, Nahum, Revelation, in the middle there. Alright, so let's go to the minor prophets, squiz around in the minor prophets around Daniel in that space, and you'll come to Nahum, chapter 1, in verses 2 and 3. It says there, that the Lord is a jealous and an avenging God. The Lord takes vengeance and is filled with wrath. The Lord takes vengeance on his foes and vents his wrath against his enemies. Notice 3. The Lord is slow to anger but great in power. The Lord will not leave the guilty unpunished. So again, the lesson is very strong. Leave vengeance to God. He is the powerful one and he will do it. Notice verse 3 there. The Lord is slow to anger. That's not us, is it? When someone does a wrong to us, what do? We come with the left fist or right fist and we're ready to punch back straight away. We are not slow to anger. God says, that is my space. I will set the vengeance in my time. But he is great in power. And often think that we think we're powerful. We think our right fist hitting them in the face for the ugly word that they've said to us is of great power. God says no. And notice the next line there. The God will not leave the guilty unpunished. Sometimes when we feel that we have forgiven someone, we feel that they are now unpunished. Not so. Not in God's eyes. We want that punishment today. The day we say, I forgive you, That's when we want the punishment to land on that person. God says, no, no, no. I want you to offer the forgiveness. In my time, I will look after the vengeance and the retribution that takes place. The third thing. Forgiving someone doesn't mean that they are now eliminated from the consequences. Let's say you have an abusive husband, or someone does a financial transaction against you at work and is wrong. You can forgive that person, but that does not mean that you now stop phoning the police and saying, this is wrong. Or phoning someone else, and they have to bear the consequences of their wrong, but that still you are still able to forgive them for what they have wronged you for. So consequences and forgiveness are separate. The fourth thing, forgiving someone does not mean that you forget. We often use the phrase forgive and forget. No, 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 no. Forgiving someone does not mean that you forget. And why? Because you create a boundary around something. What is the point of forgiving someone and you immediately walk into that same space and they hit you again? What's the point of that? So the idea is that you forgive someone, you understand the boundary of where you got hurt, and now you say, I remember that, and I'm not going to walk into that hurt spot again. I'm going to stand out of it. And that's an important thing to understand, that it does not necessarily mean forgiveness. However, if you are on a good relationship with someone, you can forgive and forget. Okay? That's when you have a relationship that is the best of relationships. Like a good husband and wife relationship. The husband might have said something terse, sharp, out of turn, and he says to his wife, please forgive me, I forgive you of that story. If she is ready and keen at that stage, she will also say, sure, no hard feelings, we move on from here, never to talk about it again. That is forgiving and forgetting. And when relationships are strong, people can do that. But it's not necessarily always the case. And so don't try and necessarily live in that space and think that applies to all forgiveness. Because it doesn't. If the person has been abusive, hurted you financially, gets you into wrong space all the time, remember that and saying that's a dangerous territory to move into. And therefore I'm not going to move into it. And put myself in harm's way again. It's important to understand as well that forgiveness is not necessarily reconciliation. A person might say this, who is the abusive of the two? Just forgive me, the person will say. Just forgive me. Let's go back to things as how they were. Sometimes you may never be able to go back to how things were. There's a lot of hurt that has happened, a lot of mistrust, a lot of damage, and you maybe cannot go back to just how things were. They might say, just pretend that it never happened. No, no, no. You can't just pretend that it never happened. There's so much hurt, so much reconciliation that has to take place. And so forgiveness is different to reconciliation. You can forgive someone. Reconciliation might be a longer journey that takes before you become reconciled and the two of you are again. So now we come to the Lord's table. And the person that was able to forgive keeps. And this is where we need to be able to be. We needed to be in a space where we can forgive. We need to be in a space that does cultivate good relationships, where we can forgive and forget at the same time. Because our Lord Jesus Christ, part of the bread and the wine, the symbol of grace, just within that wine that we have today, is the symbol of forgiveness. And Jesus Christ, on the cross, he said, it is finished. He had done his space. He had forgiven those that tortured him and put him on the cross. And he realized that vengeance was for his father to undertake. It wasn't for him to come with the powerful sword and take it back. And he had to realize that on the cross, when he says, "It is finished," he does not know the Father's time for bringing back the vengeance and the retribution. I'm the powerful God, and Jesus taught us that. To look to the powerful God who is slow to anger. And so for us, brethren and sisters, as we partake of the bread and wine, let us learn to drop the jawbone of the ass. We pick up the jawbone of the ass too readily and we kill 1,000 people. Our Lord Jesus Christ, in his open hands, he had dropped it long time ago. And he asks us to do the same. Instead, he asks us to pick up forgiveness. The cup of forgiveness, the cup of grace, is what we hold in our hands instead. And together then with forgiveness, we walk to the kingdom of God.